You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
What's going on, everybody? This is Side B of this week's Clock Radio Speakers. You can catch Side A on clockradiospeakers.com.
Cheer.
I am Doc. Got Armand on the other side.
Cheer.
So we talked NBA playoffs. We talked a little bit about Coachella. We talked about the nerdiness of CD ripping groups in the early 2000s. It was a good conversation. Good conversation. But now we're going to talk about some music. We're going to start with the stuff Armand doesn't really want to talk about, but it's all good. Because we're going to draw them in, everybody. You're going to help me out. Two artists that are loosely associated, well, one more than the other, but who have the sort of orbit around Cash Money in a certain way. So Currency, who was at one point affiliated with Cash Money, affiliated with Young Money, but then sort of now is one of the prototypes for here's how an artist can just make music and have a solid fan base. A couple other artists that do this, but Currency to me is unique amongst rappers because he's very comfortable with what he is.
Yeah.
Like he, sometimes to a detriment, right? Like, so he put out two projects. He put out Pilot Talk 3 and then another car show or something. I can't remember the name of it.
More Saturday morning cartoons or something like that.
No. Let's see. We got the internet. Give me a sec. Even more Saturday night cartoons. Yeah, you're right. All right, got it.
I said Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's cool. So I thought you were mainly saying like cartoons.
Cartoon.
The even more Saturday night cartoons EP to me was pretty forgettable. But Pilot Talk 3 was interesting because, like, so when we talk about artists like Crit, when we talk about even someone like Kendrick, right? We always talk about like, do they have the same image of what they think makes them successful versus what their fans want? And someone like Currency, to me, he is super in tune with what his fan base wants to hear.
Yep.
He's not overextending. He's not trying to make crossover records. He's going to rap about weed. He's going to rap about cars. And he's gonna rap slow, and there's gonna be some pretty good beats on some of this stuff.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much his entire catalog over the past 4 years.
He was putting out a lot of mixtapes like in 07, 08.
Yeah. I mean, but he's been on this run, you know, and,
right.
And it's super consistent. And in this era of, you know, artists trying to figure out like how they can solidly like make money and all this stuff, like to me, who he knows who he is. And while I sometimes, you know, like listening to his music, and I'm not going to go in track by track on Pilot Talk 3, but like listening to his music, and I'm wondering if you feel the same way for the Currency music that you do listen to, like I know exactly what I'm getting. And there's part of me that's kind of disappointed by that. But then there's part of me that's like, no, I get it. Like, I know he's not going to like blow me away with like his flow and his lyrics. Right. But yeah. I know he's going to be pretty reliable with his beats. And I know I can put this on when I'm driving around, and I'm probably going to be okay with that. So is that sort of how you feel about Currency as well?
Yeah. You know what you're going to get when you listen to him. And he's not trying to be anything beyond what he is. Yeah.
As a fan, is there a downside to that? Like, is there a downside to like, well, I know that when I listen to this, I'm not going to be like blown away.
No. Okay. I think we could stand for more artists to be niche artists.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, music is so oversaturated. I don't need one artist to be everything. So I don't need the era that you and I came up on where the artist did the girl record, the street record, the club record, the crossover record. Like, I don't need that on my album.
Mm.
If you want to give me, you know, if it's an EP, give me 5 or 6 consistent tracks. If it's an album, give me 9 to 12 consistent tracks that are dope. You're doing what I expect you to do. Or, you know, even if you're stretching out a little bit, it's still a stretch that makes sense, I suppose. Even if it doesn't, like, even if you just have the confidence to take those risks as an artist, like, you know what? I'm going to rap over a folk song, and because I think this song is dope. And hopefully my fans will like it too. They'll trust me enough to know when they hear that I'm rapping over folk, that it's a dope folk record. And that's what it is. I think more artists could stand to do that. And I believe that artists are starting to do that. I think we as an audience are just behind on that.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think the Drake project was a niche project. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're just used to Drake doing, not even crossover music, but we're just used to making Drake. Drake making records that are on the radio, or now radio has switched its format to fit Drake songs, you know, but there's no song on If You're Reading This Is Too Late that like stands out, or all right, I had to make this type of record. Same with Kendrick's album, same with a lot of the albums that we heard or that we reviewed this year. I don't really hear a lot of that. So I think it's getting to that point where, you know, there's a lot of really dope artists and they're making dope music for their audience. And, you know, I as a fan, I guess, like I appreciate that.
Interesting. I guess the only thing I would say to that is I think that you have to, like, artists have to be okay then with the notion that they're not going to like crossover. They're not like, for most artists, when they settle into a niche, that's exactly what it sounds like. It's a niche.
I mean, but you say settling like it's a bad thing. Like everybody doesn't have to cross over.
No, I agree with that. But I think that the history of hip hop is full of people who have tried to cross over and they keep trying to cross over. Like, I think here's an interesting example. Like, imagine if like in 2009, if like 50 Cent realized that he had this niche of like of mixtape style projects that he could make and people would have been happy with. All those like all those G-Unit producers that they had, like him over Illmind Beats and stuff like imagine if instead of him still trying to be 50 Cent from 2003, if instead he was okay, if he was happy with, you know what? I've got this niche. I made a ton of money. People like this style of music I make now. Let me just go ahead and make this style of music. But 50 could never let go that he wasn't 50 Cent anymore.
But I also think that was like the fans' fault, and whether that was conditioning from the artists and the record labels, and largely 50 conditioned his fans to do that. You know, I think 50 was kind of ahead of his time. He realized it now. I didn't listen to the last G-Unit project, but the one that we reviewed a while ago, that was a niche project.
Right, but I think he just kind of went, I don't know, I think he was almost too late to that. I think it also helps that Currency was never a big star.
Right, agreed. Absolutely. Yes, yes. Yes, so Drake, using Drake as an example is an anomaly of an example because of what Drake ended up doing with radio and with pop music. You know, most artists, yeah, if you settle into a niche, when you've tasted a certain level of success, it could look like a step back. But if you finagle it in the right way, you'll be in a good place. That's if you finagle it the right way.
You're right. And I think, so like to think about someone who to me, and now granted I'm not his biggest fan anyway, but to me is on the down slope of his career now would be Lil Wayne. And,
which is unfortunate because he's been rapping.
Right. But he's clearly not at the peak of his career anymore, right?
Yeah.
So what'll be interesting is to see how somebody like him adapts to that. Is there a world where there's a niche that Lil Wayne is okay being in that doesn't involve him being the best known rapper in the world? It's sort of like in the NBA, like, can you go from being an all-star to like the spot up 3-point shooter off the bench? It's a lot easier to be a long-term veteran when you were never the star in the first place. I wonder about that, you know? So like for guys like Currency, well, Fab's an interesting example because I know you've been talking about these Fab records, and I haven't. I really got to listen to these, but I just for whatever reason, I keep not listening to them.
Boy,
I know.
He is Fab Banks. The Jada freestyles are good, but Fab and Banks have been rapping, boy.
And those are two guys that we have talked about over and over on the show as rappers who get it. Yeah. And they were big. They were at their peak. Were definitely bigger names than Currency. Now they weren't as big as Wayne was at Wayne's peak, right? But they were certainly big names who have, frankly, adjusted really well to.
Yeah, Fab in particular. I think Banks is still
a little bit.
Yeah, I think Banks is still kind of, but Fab definitely adjusted well. He scaled back, finagled it, and made it work. I mean, he hasn't put out an album in freaking... Well,
he put out the Young OG project.
I don't count that as an album. I just don't. But I mean, like a full-fledged, you know, Def Jam rollout. Because I guess that was still on Def Jam. But I don't know. For whatever reason, I don't consider Young OG project an album. Maybe because I'm still waiting on Loso's Way 2. Not sure. But to me, he hasn't put an album out since Loso's Way. And that was 2008? 10?
It's been a while. Like, Fab's a great example of somebody who found multiple niches.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He found niches outside of just rapping. So, you know, he used to start stuff on Twitter for a while. He used to do hashtags and stuff. You know, he got into Twitter rap where he was making hashtag raps. He got in a fashion thing where he was kind of leading the 90s trend. And like there's different places where Fab maneuvered at. But him doing what he's doing now makes sense because he kind of he laid that foundation down with those other niches. Now when he's rapping, he's not looking like, oh, Fab is washed up and he needed something to do to be relevant. Go back to the freestyles. It totally makes sense for him.
Right.
Totally makes sense
and
for him.
And for him, it's the answer wasn't my career. In order for my career to survive, I've got to have these big hits. Instead, it was for him. It turns out that like multiple niches is probably better than trying to put out one big project every 18 months. Right. Instead, it's
absolutely.
I reach this niche. I get money this way. I reach this niche. I get money that way. This niche. Like he could just float between these and he's all good.
Yep. So again, the Clue tapes, the fact you've got Clue at the beginning of the tapes, you're picking classic. I mean, God, Doc, he rhymed over the Been Around the World remix.
I know. I saw it and.
And he murdered it. Murdered. It's man, as a rappity rap head, like I'm just, it warms my heart to wake up on. And he drops them late on Friday and Friday nights is like. The best night in the world for the Wash Gang because, you know, you eat real good. You got church late. You eat real good. You sit on the couch and you just comb through YouTube on your flat screen and then you fall asleep. And to wake up Saturday morning to like a new freestyle where I can run around the city, it's warmer out, and hear him over, you know, Wu-Tang and the F-Wit or Mad Lion, Take It Easy, or... You know, even a record like Shook Ones, like I don't want to hear anybody rhyme over Shook Ones, but he killed it.
Right. I mean, because the weird thing about Fab is he, for someone who's been around as long as he has, he hasn't really slipped that much.
Nah.
Like Fab sounds like Fab.
Definitely.
Right. He doesn't have like Raekwon disease.
Definitely.
And I, you know what? I haven't heard his new project yet. I heard there's some good tracks on it. But, you know, he still sounds like Fab is what I love to say. So, what I forgot to say about the Currency album is, for me anyway, and I admit I don't pay attention to all of his projects, but at least in terms of his Pilot Talks, which I would argue are probably his most high-profile projects, I enjoyed Pilot Talk 1. I did not really love Pilot Talk 2. They made a big switch away from sample beats. They tried to do everything live. This one, he's just back on samples. There's some pretty dope beats on here. Opening credits is really crazy.
Yeah, one of the beats, I saw the instrumental on my SoundCloud feed, so I checked it out, and it was actually kind of dope.
Yeah, there's some really good beats there. Cargo beat. Planes, 560 SL, Fight Shows, All I Know, Briefcase. There's some, like, he's not going to blow you away, but, like, if you've liked any Currency stuff in the past, like, at least half the album is really dope beats, and frankly, there's not really a bad beat on it.
Yeah, Rhymes Like Wait. That beat was cool. That beat was dope.
There's some good beats on it. But so anything else you want to say about Fab in particular? We sort of bouncing around, but...
Nah, but I do want to ask... Well, our audience has asked for this, so I'm going to ask you because it asked this. What... Is there anything on the show that we haven't talked about yet that, like, you listen to, that you're listening to this week?
The new Alabama Shakes album. Just came out officially today. It was streaming on NPR last week. Some incredible songs. I guess I would describe them as sort of like Southern blues rock.
Uh-huh.
Sort of, imagine a little bit more soulful Black Keys with, a Black woman singing instead of two white guys. there's a couple records that are just unbelievably incredible. Like the whole album isn't perfect by any stretch. There's a couple tracks that I want to skip, but there are some songs that I'm just like, wow. And I love when I hear music that just makes me go, right? Where I get to shut off my like analytical nerd brain for a second and like just feel the music. Love when that happens.
Yeah. I mean,
there's some songs we're going to talk about today where I'm going to use words like, I love this song. I'm so excited to say that because, you know what? Let me just say this. I'm not going to talk about anybody in particular because we get this all the time. Like, there are people who think that we are overly critical on this show. Some of y'all know. And I hear you. I absolutely do, right? Because I'll sit there and I'll go, well, this one's like this, this one's like this. Like, sometimes it's really just like, You just want to hear music that surprises you. I think that's the hardest thing in this era. Not just because we host a podcast, but just like we know so much more information. Music leaks out so much. Like the surprise factor. I love that. I miss it. I think that plays a role in music, right? Where you hear something and you're just not expecting it.
Absolutely.
Expectations matter so much.
Absolutely.
Which is why this Young Thug album was actually kind of interesting to me.
Okay.
Because I had really no expectations for this. It's not what I would consider a really good album, but it's actually very difficult to judge. So this was supposed to be called The Carter Six. There's a whole history around this.
No, it's called The Carter Six.
No, it's actually not.
No. We're going to call it The Carter Six.
No, this is a really interesting story.
Okay.
It's supposed to be called The Carter Six. In his eye, like, you remember how, now Kobe is revered as a legend now, but before Kobe really did anything on his own, there was that stretch where his, like, adoration of Michael Jordan kind of bordered on the creepy. That's how Young Thug is about Lil Wayne. Like, and I didn't really, I actually had to read an article too. Like, to him, it was so natural that, oh, Wayne is retiring. How funny. Rappers don't retire. No. Wayne is hypothetically retiring after Carter 5, so of course I'll make Carter 6.
So it was supposed to be like, I'm going to take the torch.
Right, right. The problem, of course, is Birdman, who, believe it or not, Birdman's verses on here are actually not bad at all.
Hey, I heard that.
It's kind of weird. The way that he differs from Young Thug actually does him huge favors. Not that Thug is, I'm not going to call him bad, he's just so different. But it's, for whatever reason, I don't know who's writing for Birdman right now, but this Birdman actually sounds good. It's really unusual. Like, I was, talk about being surprised. Like, there's a record on Young Thug called Knocked Off where I was just like, what is going on here? And I'll talk about sonically why I think that's the case, but like real quick. So like this was supposed to be called Carter Six. There was threatened litigation. They ended up doing two things. They changed the name to Barter Six, right? And the rationale was, well, it's a Crip thing and people switch B's for C's all the time. I'm like, okay. And then what they also did is they are now, flip side of Drake, they are now calling this officially a mixtape.
Mm.
So,
well, mixtape, but it's on iTunes and Spotify. It sold like 16,000 records first week.
Right. They're calling this a mixtape with a debut album called, I think, Hi-Tunes, meant to come out later this year.
So then what's...
What is this? Weird album. So if you think, like, to me, like, so my experience listening to Young Thug has typically been, like, he's done records with Metro Boomin, and I think that Metro Boomin's beats are typically really good. We talk about, like, modern trap beats, so I really like most, I'm intrigued by most of their collaborations. There are two producers on here total, like, London on the track and somebody else, I can't think of his name. And there is a very consistent sound on here, almost to the point of being the same song over and over again. It's low key, not like in a Drake way, but in like a, I really just can't describe it. It's more like, it's like if you think of the spectrum of trap, where like on one end you've got Ross trying to redo BMF every single year, and he's doing it again with Lex Luger now, right?
Lex Luger.
Right. And then imagine if you tone that aggressiveness all the way down, like completely down, not in an R&B way, but just toned it down completely. And that's what this album sounds like. And Young Thug is somebody who I actually think he has talent. I don't know if it's always used 100% well. I don't know if his songs are always fully formed like they should be. Clearly has a knack for hooks. And his music, much kind of in an interesting way, almost, I can't believe I'm going to compare the two, kind of reminds me, in almost like a hip-hop version of The Dream. And what I mean by that is when The Dream was at his best, he would almost find himself with hooks inside of hooks. Like he would have too many hooks in a song. And there are sometimes when Young Thug can be at his best on here, it's like, to me, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's clear that Young Thug can do something. And he has a really interesting sound, but this screams of a throwaway. This screams of Birdman trying to make money. And there are a lot of people whose hands are in the pockets of Young Thug.
Yeah, I forgot about that that article that detailed the initial deal he signed.
There are so many people getting paid off this Young Thug stuff. Like, to me, if Birdman were really serious about this being like... Because Young Thug had, he had some singles that charted. Like, he was, you know, Rich Gang did actually pretty well on the charts last year. Like, you would think that there'd be a lot of money behind this. And this does not sound like that. It's not that it sounds bad. It sounds really, you want to talk about niche? This is like a niche project. It's really weird. I can't really describe it except to say his music strikes me as the sort of thing that is really great to sing along to when you're like a little buzzed. Kind of like how for me, Chop and Screw, when I was in college, was even better when I came home at the end of the night and I was feeling a little tipsy.
Jake Vaughn tipsy?
It like matched my brain speed a little bit, right? Thug's music is kind of like that. And I'll stop. I can't believe I'm spending this much time on Young Thug. Let me just say that this is, at the very least, it is an attempt at a different kind of Atlanta trap sound. And I will give him credit for that, which is to say, it's clear that not only is he influenced by Drake and Lil Wayne, but that Drake is now influenced by him. And that sonically, he is comfortable in a lane that is not like what I've heard from Atlanta. So my concern with the Atlanta trap sound has always been, where are they going to go from here? Right? It's sort of like how when producers tried to imitate Just Blaze, and I was one of them in the mid-2000s, there became a point at which you're like, dude, you can't throw any more hi-hats and cymbals on top of that.
Yeah.
And for the ATL trap sound, at some point it's like, okay, you can't actually fit any more hi-hats in a quarter note, right? In a bar, you now have 64 hi-hats. You cannot put any more. It's just going to sound like a buzz. And so there becomes this like moment where you're like, okay, the format, the structure of beats that people are making, you reach the limit. And so all that to say, at the very least, Young Thug is trying something different. Now, there are times where I'm listening to this and I'm like, I don't really know. It's almost like, I realize I'm rambling here. Like, it's probably because I know that you don't want to say anything about Young Thug. Like, it's almost like if somebody listened to Lil Wayne's first attempt at autotune and then didn't pay attention to anything else that happened in hip hop and then just zoomed off in this other direction. It's really unusual to hear. So all that to say, it's not bad. It's different. It's catchy. That's the killer. And that's what, Armand, I'm telling you, you probably should not listen to it. Because it's the kind of stuff where you listen to it once or twice and it worms your way into your head. There was the BET performance, right, where they famously couldn't understand what he was singing, so the closed captions were like gibberish or whatever. He can be like that at times, but he's got a knack for melody. Very interested to see what happens if Birdman really opens up the budget and really tries to get him like a big quote-unquote project. Be interesting to see.
She gonna have to.
Right.
Yeah, he's gonna have to.
All right.
Well, say all that to say, I have absolutely nothing to say.
And that's cool. That's totally cool.
I don't know, man. Like, I just...
It's not for you.
I talked about this online, but just... Or offline, but just, like, when it comes to music nowadays, like, I'm just largely indifferent. And, you know, wrestlers will tell you... I think I've said this on the show. Wrestlers will tell you that the minute they hit that curtain, they want to know whether you're cheering or you're booing them. That lets them know that they're doing their job. And I'm that guy where, like, all the wrestlers are coming out, and I'm just like, all right. Like, it's not because it's whack. It's not that hip hop is dying. I'm not becoming this bitter old rap fan where I don't want to listen to real hip hop. Like, nah. Like, I listen to projects, and there's been some really good albums to drop this year, but I'm on my 80s, like, Patrice Rushen, Anita Baker, Luther Vandross. I mean, I even went back and was listening to, like, Tammy Terrell stuff. Like, I'm just not there. I'm just not there. And in turn, like, you know, I can't listen to Young Thug objectively, because when I listen to hip hop, I'm just like, whatever. But then when I listen to other music, I don't know if I'm just in this nostalgic kick. You know, when you turn 30 and everything changes and you start reflecting on your life a lot more, and maybe I'm on that kick. I don't know, but I'm just not there. So you like Young Thug? Great. And not you. I'm just in general.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
People like Young Thug? Great. People don't like this album? Great. People love this album? Cool. You know, people think that we're super critical about stuff? All right. You know, I think sometimes I feel it, but then other times I'm like, they're not listening to the episodes where, you know, we're praising projects. I haven't heard a whole lot of, like, this is bad this episode. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, man.
It's all good. I mean, I'm glad you said that. So, like, I think that the notion of, like, you want to feel some sort of way about a project. So there's two projects.
Yeah, let me say this before you phase in. And dang, I forgot my point. Trying to interrupt you. Oh, there it is. Okay. Because Clock Radio Speakers is such an analytical show, or it can be, like, I think you hit the head, you hit the nail on the head earlier where you were just like, it's really great to hear a project and just enjoy it and right. feel it and say, you know what? This is good because this is good. I can't do an hour podcast on, you know, the details of this Alabama Shakes album. It's just really good.
No, I could. I really could.
But I'm saying, like, your first initial response was, I love the way this feels. It surprised me. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I think for me, either I have to go away and come back or, you know, or I'm just in a space where music that I grew up on is surprising me or whatever. I'm just enjoying feeling that music rather than, you know, some of these projects that we're about to talk about that, you know, we're going to really delve into. I just want to be able to like feel a project and that be it. So
to me, like the notion of wanting to feel something about a project, the two projects that we want to talk about for the rest of this episode, I definitely felt some sort of way about them.
Prior to hearing them or?
No, when I heard them, I definitely did not feel, well, like I had an opinion. You know what I mean? So I want to start with The Dream.
Okay.
You and I have been on record with some serious Tarius Nash stannery.
Absolutely. If you ever want to hear us just like
nerd out,
like not even nerd out, just like I don't want to call it fawn over, but like that Dream retrospective, like is really just us like almost like kids, like, oh, did you see when this happened? And then he was like, pew, pew, pew. And he was like, da, 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 da. And he was like, ah, like that's how we basically described the first 2.5 Dreams.
Me talking about Fancy is hilarious.
That's a classic Clock Radio Speakers moment because we were really like trying to get through that album. And not trying to like in a bad way, but like we wanted to talk about these albums. We really wanted to talk about Fancy. So when we got there, it was like.
I still remember my notes. I was like, okay. And at 4:20, this happens. And then we talk.
You completely like.
Because that's an incredible song. So all that to say, I have really high expectations for The Dream. I can't help it.
Yeah.
Because even though I think his first two projects are not perfect, when you take his, not even just the stuff he's done for the people, but like his solo work, like when you take it in aggregate, what he did in the mid to late 2000s, I think is some of the best R&B work of the past, whatever, 15 years.
Well, his first two albums, even though they're not perfect, they're classic, right?
I guess I would say that. I think that's about right. With him, the good so much outweighs the bad. Typically,
yeah.
That when it doesn't, like if a song doesn't work, it's kind of okay. Because he always has these stretches that are just like, wow.
Because when it works, it really works.
Right. Like it just really works.
Yeah.
Like the Fast Car, is it Fast Car, Falsetto, She Needs My Love and Nikki? Or is it Nikki? I can't remember. But there's like a 4-song stretch in that first album that's just like, all right, hold on. Like the first time you hear it, you're like, wait a minute. What just happened?
Yeah. I still never forget. I mean, you did that with me. You were trying to put me on A Dream for the longest because I was not a Dream fan at all. Did not like Shawty Was a 10.
I hated Falsetto.
Hated every Dream song like that he wrote, that I heard him on. Hated stuff he did for Mariah Carey. Hated all of it. And then you gave me that gave me that mixtape. And I was like, especially hearing Fancy for the first time, which is one of the most incredible songs in a very long time, maybe ever to me personally.
So all that to say, I have incredibly high expectations for The Dream. I thought the 4Play album was pretty good, and the 1.5 that I made is even better. Because there was other songs, like to me the finished product just wasn't 100% there, but there were really good songs on 4Play. And that was 2 years ago, right?
4Play was...
2013?
Hold on, I'm gonna pull it up right now.
Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, 2013, 1977 was 2011?
Yeah.
And then they re-released it in 2012, and then Love King was 2010. Yep. See, but I really like, and that's the thing about The Dream's albums, like Love, I really liked Love King. Like Love King has some serious joints on it. 1977 was alright, but that was his 808s and Heartbreaks, so I give him a pass.
There's still some, there's like Used to Be is great. No, wait, yeah, Long Gone.
No,
Wish You Were Mine.
Wish You Were Mine.
Wish You Were Mine's a classic. I like, you know, Real is dope. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, Real was dope. Pharrell killed that. You probably like 4Play more than I did.
But I think 4Play's got some records, yeah.
It's got a couple. Michael's dope. Self-Conscious is dope. Equestrian's dope.
Equestrian's like, amazing.
Yeah, Equestrian is crazy. That song is crazy. That's on my Not Till I Get Married list. yeah, like it still got some records, but like I think you and I think let me rewind this and say this. Like earlier this year, prior to with this Crown album, we heard, because the last few albums, we sort of gave him a bit of a pass because he wasn't working with Tricky Stewart like that.
Right.
But with this one, we heard, all right, Crown is going to be all Dream and Tricky. So I don't know about you, but then my interest peaked.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay, I need to make sure that I hear this. And I don't know if you ever heard the Rap Radar podcast, but it was extremely nerdy. And Dream, they were nerding out over their records in the process of creating some of their classic records. Like, if you haven't listened to that yet, I suggest you check them both out because it's really nerdy.
So going into the Crown EP, you had high expectations.
Not high expectations. I had, see, because I've been so indifferent about, you know, current music for so long, like the fact that I had expectations was a good thing.
Okay. I want to go track by track on this. It's only six songs, so.
You go right ahead.
So track one is Prime. Critics, so far, when I've seen, I don't think critics love the song, but I actually like Prime.
The song is dope.
It's not like peak Dream, but it's pretty good. It's pretty close. Prime's a good opener.
Compared to the last few albums, like I'll take this over some of the other songs that he's released to put on his projects. Like this song's dope.
Yeah, I like Prime a lot. That's my ish with T.I. I was like, like I see what he's doing. Like Dream, for all his greatness at his peak, he definitely had formulas, right? This is clearly him trying to do his single formula. I don't really think this works 100%. How do you feel about this song?
I think this song is super dope.
No, it's not that good.
Nah, this song is dope. It's a way better makeup bag.
I don't think makeup bag's that good either.
Makeup bag is good. Like it's straight. But nah, fam. That's my ish is a dope record.
Nah.
It's a dope record. Even though it's formulaic, like I don't have any problem with that. Especially when I haven't heard that formula in a long time. I'm cool with it.
Okay. All I Need. How do you feel about this?
This song is cool. This song is good.
See, to me, like, I was like, okay, like, I'm good with, like, we're in the zone again. Like, Prime and All I Need, I was like, yeah. You know, like, this isn't a classic record, but I really like All I Need. And then they even try to do a transition, right? So, like, All I Need goes right into Fruition. But Fruition isn't really good.
Nah, I'm going to just go ahead and cut you off right here. I don't like the second half of this album.
Well, I'm going to really talk about it. So, like, the guitar riff is catchy on Fruition, but the rest of the song's not really good at all. It's weird to say, like, sometimes songs don't 100% work, but it's weird to say that a Tricky and the Dream song just has a bad beat. Fruition's just not a good beat, which is totally unusual to say. Throw It Back. If anybody saw me tweet last night, like, my wife saying that the Dream doesn't need to make club records because we heard Throw It Back, strip club records, and she's like, it was funny because she's like, the Dream has club records. I was like, what songs? And she's like, Fancy. To which I just laughed. But like,
I actually would like to be in a club,
right? And what I told her, I said, frankly, if I was in a strip club and I had Fancy come on, I'd probably take all the money out of my wallet.
That's funny.
Throw It Back and Steady's Benz are so obviously, hey, I can make records like these youths. Like Sadie's Benz, the first half of that song feels like a Ray Schremer record.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Which, that really hurts me to say.
Speaking of that, I finally heard that Rihanna single, Better Have My Money.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Like, dang. I only say that because you and I have been on record saying that, like, Rihanna does a great job of assembling great songwriters and great producers and getting really good songs. So regardless of, you know, whether you like the song or not, like she knows how to pick really well-written, really composed well songs for her fan base and for her brand. I didn't need her doing like a Young Thug impression. I almost thought she was, and that's not even like a slander. Like I just thought she was better than that. Maybe not.
Right. I mean, so far, like that and then the American Oxygen record, like.
Still didn't hear that. And I didn't hear she put out another record yesterday. But, you know, you put out a record on 420, you're just guaranteeing me not to listen to it.
I feel like there is just no buzz for her right now. These records are not hitting.
They're not hitting, but I'm not worried about it.
No, but I mean, it'd be real funny if like the album's just, for whatever reason, just not good. So they call it a title exclusive. hoping that, and then they go, oh, well, it didn't sell well because it was title exclusive.
I'm very curious to see what they do with. Yeah, she might be the sacrificial lamb. Like, she might be exclusively on title. I wouldn't doubt that.
Like, I just had, like, these last couple records from her, I'm like, eh. Yeah. But Sadie's Benz, like, they do, like, a switch up, and they, you know, they got two different beat switches, and no, it's like, it's, and this is kind of an interesting thing to talk about, like, what happens when you're known for making music that is, like, considered, like, I use the phrase state of the art sometimes when talking about music, like, when you're making what is considered, like, of the moment, like, right there, like, hits, what happens when the sound changes? Like, how that moment affects, especially producers, is always so interesting to watch in hip-hop and art. Do they adapt? Do they have just a style that they claim is their own that sort of operates outside of trends? Do they incorporate elements but still keep key things? Do they just try to pander directly? It's really interesting to watch how artists deal with changing trends. And I do not, at like, Throwback and Sadie's Benz are like, oh God, like, I almost want to tell The Dream, stay out of the club, because whatever you're hearing is not working.
The Dream makes I'm about to do something music. Like, not I'm about to do something, like, in a bad way. Like, Dream doesn't, other than, and it's funny, your wife said, you know, Fancy was his club record. Because I like to hear, you know, I Love Your Girl. Like, that's a guilty pleasure record. That's a club record. But, like, for the most part, if I'm driving to a location, I'm listening to The Dream. Like, I didn't listen to this album until this past Saturday night. I was out in the city running around, hitting up some spots or whatever. And it served as a great soundtrack to that. Like, it's not like The Dream. I don't want to hear, I don't want to hear Prime in the club. You know, it's not necessarily a club record. And that's not bad. I just don't want to hear it in, I don't know.
All that to say, I'm not really enthused by this EP. It's just not really good.
I mean, it's six songs.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's I'm going to go, I mean, but I'm going to go ahead and take That's My Ish and Prime and All I Need and take that. And all right, Dream gave me three dope records. I'll take that.
He gave us like two good records. Like, I still, these aren't dope Dream records.
I think at this point,
that Dream's not coming back, is it?
Yeah, that Dream's not coming back.
I hear you. It's just tough. Like, we led the charge. Me personally, like, I can't tell you how many people I got into The Dream. Like, that mix I made for you, I made that for a lot of people.
I made it for everybody.
So many people I got into The Dream. So this is particularly painful to watch. On a high, what I hope is a high note. I want to end this side of the podcast on a high note. Is there anything else you want to say about The Dream? This Tyler album.
Okay.
So Tyler has had kind of a, to me, he's had a really interesting career. The first album with Yonkers on it was interesting and maybe promising, but wasn't all the way there.
No, this is when he was doing his shock raps, his right. Shock deep raps. And right. Everybody thought he was a Satan worshiper, et cetera, et cetera. People really didn't take him serious because of that, because of the shock raps.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't think people took him serious.
Wolf was the second album, right?
Yeah, it was Goblin. Yeah.
It was Bastard, then Goblin, then Wolf.
Okay, so that was his third album.
Right. And Wolf had some records.
Wolf was dope.
There was,
not
Wolf there
had
was,
some records. Wolf was well, dope.
There was the, you know, there was some stuff, like, I remember, like, Tamale, and there was some other records that you were like, I don't really know about this.
Yeah, I mean, like, Tamale's the reason why I'm not going to a Tyler, the Creator show. I don't want to be anywhere in the vicinity when that record pops off. I will get punched in the face by somebody, and I will fight, and I'll feel old because I'm fighting. And bones will pop that haven't moved in 8 years.
There was some dope records, though.
Wolf was one of the better albums of 2013, in the midst of your Magna Carta's, your My Name Is My Name, Your Nothing Was The Same. It's like, Wolf was dope. It was probably too long, but...
Yeah, but like, it was really good.
Yeah.
And so... Cherry Bomb, I actually paid no attention to anything that, like, leaked off this or anything like that. It felt like it kind of came out of nowhere a little bit.
It did.
I want to go track by track on this.
Okay.
If only because, I'm just going to get this right out front. I was pleasantly surprised by this album. This is like the Lost NERD album.
Absolutely it is.
Death Camp, track one.
Is immediately like, hey.
Right, it took me, I actually want to get this out of the way. Tyler produces every single song on here.
I'm going to say this.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna say this. I feel like Pharrell, not say Pharrell gave him these beats, but I feel like Pharrell, every single idea that Pharrell can't do because of, you know, what his brand has sort of evolved into, he gave all those ideas to Tyler.
See,
because Pharrell can't make this album in 2015. He makes an album like Girl. He has to make that album like, he has to make an album like Girl. He can't make this album right now. He can't.
You might be going a little far there.
No, he can't.
No. And just Pharrell, I don't think Pharrell gave him these ideas.
I totally think he did. I know Tyler is a Pharrell stan. Totally. And I think in turn, Pharrell is like, behold, like a wall in Pharrell's like studio moved, and there's all this stuff that Pharrell sits on. Not to say here I'm gonna give you this stuff and ghostwrite it, but to say that Pharrell didn't have his hands or help him steer this car, nah,
I don't.
And
think
that's
so.
Not a, but that's not a diss. That's not a diss at all. I'm not dissing this album because this album is excellently produced.
It's fantastically produced. So I'm going to, you want to hear me rave about, I'm going to rave about songs in this album. I'm way too excited right now.
Can I also say this about Tyler real quick?
Okay.
Tyler makes the best videos in hip hop.
Hmm.
Flat out.
Well,
who?
I can't wait to talk about the video for this.
Because that video, I have not watched a rap video that much in years. I watched that video probably 20 times.
Well, I can't wait to talk about that song, but.
But let's. I'm sorry.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves. So, Death Camp, when it starts, it took me a minute. I was like, wait a minute, this is an NERD song.
I mean, Pharrell's rapping at the beginning, and then it morphs into Tyler's voice.
So yeah, Death Camp, straight up, right off the bat, it's an NERD song. Buffalo is like kind of a cousin to Push's Numbers on the Boards with the same sample.
Same sample. Well, Tyler said on Twitter that Kanye was trying to get that beat off of him.
Not surprised. I mean, the beat's pretty nice.
Beat is dope.
Hold on.
I want to go back to Death Camp.
Okay, go back to Death Camp.
I don't think we stressed like, okay, yeah, it's an NRD song.
It's a really good NRD song.
This song, Death Camp is crazy.
I'm just going to say it. I like pretty much most of the songs on here. Buffalo, like, people want to hear me get excited. I'm getting excited. Buffalo is dope. And it's a total flip from Death Camp.
Absolutely.
Tyler's rapping.
Tyler, he said it like he's not really, you know, like a rappity rapper, but he knows he can rap.
Right.
But I do want to talk about the theme of rapping and like the present slash absence of it on this album.
Yeah, there are definitely times where he gets away from that.
Well, I mean, not even that, just the fact that like you can't really hear the raps on.
The vocals are lower than normal.
The vocals alone, but he said he did that on purpose.
Yeah, there's one record where he's practically not even on it.
Right, right. But I mean, like, even this record, like Buffalo, and even Def Camp, like, these records are, like, the beats are really, really loud, and the vocals are just inside the beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell the focus was on the production.
I am okay with that.
I am, but I'm not, because then I would just rather you do an instrumental album. I mean, and he's also said that was a goal of his. He wants to do an instrumental album. But some of the rap, I'll get into it. Some of the rapping, like, kind of didn't help the album.
Interesting.
Help the song.
So Pilot feels like Neptune's meets Yeezus.
Don't give Kanye that much credit.
Stop it. But it actually kind of works.
I like the beat.
I like the melody switch up in the bridge. I like the last switch up on the last verse. Go ahead.
And that's how you know he is a NERD, a student of NERD.
Oh.
Because his bridge game is like, yeah, like he was in front row in Chad Hugo's class.
Right. And specifically like 2005 NERD.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Pilot is one of those records, to me, is not like an amazing song, but it sticks with you and it's really good in the flow of the album.
I really like the drums on this.
Mm.
The drums on this are really, really dope.
Unfortunately, Run is not really my favorite on this album.
But it's only a minute long. So.
Right. That's the good news. It's a minute and 9 seconds. Now, Find Your Wings. We are squarely in NERD territory right now.
Shout out to Roy Ayers.
Right. Who
said he wanted Thundercat and Stevie Wonder on this joint.
Right. Stevie Wonder was supposed to be on the intro, but Stevie was like, nah. Pharrell couldn't hook that.
But Stevie's on Snoop's album.
Well, he knows who Snoop is.
Right. I don't know why I feel like the Snoop and Pharrell album is gonna be really, really dope.
Like, I'm listening to this Tyler stuff, and I know like his past stuff is well produced, but like Find Your Wings is so lush.
Yeah, and Tyler, I guess, for lack of a better term, scored it, composed it.
Yeah, like there's a record later on I'm gonna gush about, or I think he brings in like Hans Zimmer's strings players and everything. Like,
no, it wasn't Hans Zimmer's string players. He recorded it at Hans Zimmer's studio.
Oh, got it.
But I mean, if you're using Hans Zimmer's studio, I mean,
so Find Your Wings is crazy.
Yep.
How do you feel about Cherry Bomb?
Man, if this, so I get it. He mixed it wrong. He mixed it intentionally because he wanted it to be loud. This is a throwback to Prodigy.
Hmm.
Firestarter.
Yeah, a little bit. You're right. But with some NERD synths.
Yep. Shout out to Flex who did an EP a while ago where he rapped over like Prodigy records. He was on that wave like years ago before it was cool. But if this record was mixed better, I would love it. The fact that it's mixed like loud on purpose because I'm getting old, like I'm like, this is loud. It's too loud. But aside from that, like the record's dope.
Yeah, it kind of, like I have to be in the mood for it, but it works.
Yeah.
I want to talk like this track 7. I'm just going to say the title because it's whatever. Blow My Load. Featuring, you know who sings in this, right?
Yes.
Wanya Morris. That's right. Voice to Men.
Sorry. Stop pointing fingers. The blame is on me. Don't ever let it go. Yeah.
Don't get me singing. I'm going to start. No.
I might have to play some Boys and Men records after the show goes off.
This song is outstanding. It's a little graphic.
That's what I was
saying. I know. It's a little graphic. This beat is crazy.
The beat is crazy, and I love Wanya on it.
The second half is unreal.
Yeah. Second half is dope, but like, yeah. I don't need. it reminds me of. And I think if you've done it reminds me of open mics where the poet comes up and does the nasty poem because he wants to like get all the girls hot and bothered. Newsflash poets, it never works. And the girl that you get hot and bothered in the audience, everybody gets her hot and bothered. Like it's not that hard. You probably don't want to deal with the girl. You probably don't want to deal with that. So I don't like the content. Content's too much. But the beat, again, the production is nuts. I love Wanya on it. It's a great idea to get Wanya on it. But just the content, I can't do it.
All that to say, I think it's a fantastic song. Content aside. Can we rave about Two Seater for like 10 minutes?
He said 10 minutes.
Bro, this beat. Woo!
This is, because it's super Doc. Like, as soon as I heard this, I was like, yo, Doc loves this.
Oh, this is amazing. I've probably listened to the song approximately 50 times.
I think he said he originally wanted Ross on it.
Ross was supposed to be on, there's like a part, like, I think it's like two, well, until he decided he was going to go all next level NERD and bring in strings and like everything else. Ross was supposed to be on it. But even still, like, once the string breakdown happens and they go back into like a regular part of the song, it's like 2.5 minutes in, Ross would have killed it. But this beat is crazy.
Yeah, that beat is nuts.
It's perfect. Perfect. I would not change a thing about this beat. I love the hook. I love the song. Breaking news. Doc loves the song. Now I'm checking my Twitter. You got me.
I'm trying to word it right. I'm trying to word it right.
Anyway, I didn't even ask you. How do you feel about Two Seater?
Nah, Two Seater's dope. Very, very dope.
And the second half is originally supposed to be called Hair Blows. But that beat, especially during the outro, Two Seater, ridiculous. Ridiculous. Like if you are like hesitant to, like for whatever reason, if all you remember from Tyler is like initially he was sort of like on a shock rap sort of thing, like, and if you have steered clear of Tyler, no joke, go on Spotify, go on YouTube, just listen to Two Seater. If you don't like Two Seater, oh boy.
Oh boy.
Why are you listening to this podcast?
Yeah, Two Seater's dope. But yeah, it's super, like, it's weird. It's like if Pharrell made a RZA beat, that's what it would sound like.
A little bit.
It's weird. It's called Two Seater, but it's like, it's mad. Like, at its core, it's mad jeans and Tim's and hoodies.
It's a crazy beat. The Brown Stains of Darkis Latifah, parts 6 through 12. It's one of the weirdest names of a song I've ever heard in my life, with Schoolboy Q on it. A completely different feel from the last couple songs.
Absolutely.
But once this beat really kicks in, like 45 seconds in, I'm way more on board with the song. The Neptune's influence is very strong here.
Yeah.
Like Eclipse-ish kind of like, I feel like this sounds like a weird version of a Eclipse beat. How do you feel about this song?
I gotta go to the second part of the song when it switches because...
Yeah.
I didn't get that far. I do like him. I do like his flow. I do like his cadence on this where he's sort of doing like a Juvenile Cash Money sort of style with it. But I don't like the beat. It sounds like rain farting or something like that. Like it just is weird. But yeah, I don't give it a chance to switch up. So
and there's a you talk about hit like there's I think it's called 6 through 12 because there's six verses, I think, on here. They're not full like 16 bars or whatever, but the verse before Schoolboy Go starts is so much like a Pharrell verse. I almost had to stop and be like, wait a minute, is this Pharrell rapping? This really is like the long lost Pharrell album we never had. I know.
And I said, okay.
You were saying that like Pharrell like gave him this stuff.
No.
Okay.
No. I said like, yo, Tyler the Creator is going, when I heard the single,
yeah.
And maybe I'm getting ahead, like I knew he was going to make the album that I wanted to hear from Pharrell, that I wanted Girl to be.
Right.
I knew he was going to do it. I don't know if Pharrell... Damn, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, let's just talk about it. Let's talk about the song. Call it Effing Young.
Yeah.
Slash Perfect. Featuring your man, Charlie Wilson.
Uncle Charlie. Ooh-wee.
How do you feel about Effing Young?
This song is amazing.
Man, this... First of all, it's like an NERD version of Young Girl.
I'm tweeting that too.
People completely forgot about Young Girl because it was on that.
You talking about In My Mind?
Yeah.
Not Quite 21?
Right.
Your lightning in the bottle, I give you rain.
I know.
Yo.
This song is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, if you aren't walking around singing the pre-hook all day long, I just don't even know.
Can we get an APB on the girl in the video? Is she 18? Is she 21?
So, and I've seen some people say that they think the song is creepy. Tyler's 24. He wrote this when he was 23, and he's talking about a 17-year-old. If you think that's creepy, you're entitled to that.
Okay, you can't say this song is creepy and you have people who are counting down to when Kylie Jenner turns 18. Right. And for some of us who are a little older, remember the days when old men were counting down to when Britney Spears would turn 18. Like, creepiness has just always existed. Like, chill. Not to say give it a pass, but like, don't act like Tyler is like that. Like, it's just the first time you've ever seen it happen. And I don't know. Me being older, you get to that place. I keep talking about how old I am. Jesus.
Yeah, you know.
I know. I'm going through that phase where like, I feel old, but I'm not old.
You're coming to grips with your age.
I am. So like when you get fake old, right? And you're not already in a relationship, you are in a weird dynamic. See, now I'm about to break this down. I saw where my brain was going. I'm like, dang, why did I say that? But now I got to finish this point. So you meet two types of girls. So you meet the girls who are maybe your age, a little older, maybe a year or two younger. They've been in relationships. They've been heartbroken. They're bitter. They can be bitter. You know, like that. Then you meet the girls who are like 23, 24, 25, and they're really, really cool, but they're young. Like, I heard it like that more than like the real life, you know, he wrote it when he was 23 and the chick was 17. So,
right.
Whatever.
I don't think the song is getting talked about nearly enough. Like, I had no idea that Tyler was capable of making a song this good. And we're just talking about the first half. Like, the second half.
Second half is super dope, too.
Ridiculous. That beat. Oh. Yeah. The little repeating snare, like, halfway through. Oh.
Yeah.
I could nerd out about these details, but, like, so the beat is, the beats for this are, like, the two beats for this song are ridiculous. But then just the structure, like, Tyler understands how to construct a record. If you're an aspiring artist and you want to move beyond intro, verse, hook, outro, listen to Tyler.
Verse, hook.
Verse, hook. Yeah. Hook, hook, hook. Like, listen to Tyler.
Hook, hook, hook. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Listen to Tyler. Just listen to Effing Young if you do nothing else. It's incredible. Incredible yeah. song. Like, I could not say enough. Like, Two-Seater, it took me a while to actually listen to the whole album over and over again because the first time through, I got through to Two-Seater and Effing Young, and then it just kept coming back to those. But, yeah, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Again, the video
is dope.
The video, not to say that the song, you know, needed help, quote unquote, but like the song or the video definitely helped the song. It's a visual song already, but then having a visual to it and a dope visual.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyler makes really, really dope videos. I really like the video to She, even though that was a little creepy. And I think was Tamale the one where they were like wrestling or whatever?
I don't even remember.
Domo 23. That video was dope too. So yeah, this was like, that was like the perfect, that into Def Camp was like the perfect way to launch the album.
You're right. Let's talk about Smuckers featuring Kanye and Lil Wayne.
This is the record that's getting the most pub, and I know why.
Okay,
and
why?
I get why, because it's Kanye. It's Kanye and Wayne on a mm-hmm. track together. Mm-hmm. It's Kanye and Wayne rapping. It's Kanye and Wayne rapping well.
Rapping well.
Over a traditional sort of Kanye Wayne-ish beat. Wayne sort of like in a Carter 3 vein. Kanye in a, I don't know, Late Registration.
Yeah.
Sort of vein or whatever. I wish that Effing Young would have got more more pub than this song, but then I get it.
If Smuckers is what lures people in to listen to Effing Young, I'm cool. Smuckers is dope.
Smuckers is dope.
Kanye's verse is pretty nice. That line about him dressing extra bummy was really funny. The beat switch, that sample is extra tough.
I sent that to you. Did you get it?
Check it.
Text.
All right. And the Wayne verse, it's dope Wayne.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, Tyler's winning with this album. Like, I did not, like, this is, it's not perfect. And we're going to talk, you know, we could talk overall about it, especially we got to get through these next two tracks. But, like, this whole run, I was just like, the second half of the album, I was like, man. Like, the Schoolboy Q record's a little out of place. But, like, I almost wonder if, like, I know that I'm guessing he doesn't want to be pigeonholed this way. But, like, I kind of want him to make, like, these lush records all the time.
Well, again, he said, I saw him say that that people were getting on him for not making the music that he was listening to. And I get that as an artist. I totally get that. So he made it a point to, so I pulled Roy Ayers in and
right.
et cetera, et cetera. So, but he said ultimately his goal, because he's been trying to produce for other artists and they won't take his beats. So his goal is to produce for other artists and then begin making instrumental albums. Cause to me, I can tell he doesn't want to rap. He's rapping on this album because he has to, or because he can. He totally, like, the focus on this is all in the production. He rapped because he had to.
Interesting.
You know, other than like a record, I mean, cause shoot, even, you know, Young doesn't have a verse until like the verse is the freaking bridge or the
right.
breakdown.
Right.
So, nah. Yeah, he's not rap, cause there's another record on this album that like he didn't need to rap on, but he did. And it's the outro.
Well, let's keep going. So let's talk about Keep the O's with Pharrell.
Oh, my bad. I forgot about Keep the O's. My bad.
I got to say, it's pretty funny that Tyler does an album full of lush NERD tracks, and then this is what the Pharrell song sounds like. It's not a bad beat, and it knocks in the car. But the second half of the song, you're like, okay. And that whole Find Your Wings part at the end is crazy.
Yeah.
But the first half, I was like, man, I don't know. How do you feel about Keep the O's?
I haven't gravitated to the song yet.
Yeah, I think it's because you're listening to Effing Young.
I mean, yeah, I'm playing Young and Perfect and the outro.
And my two-seater. I'm just doing two-seater all day long.
Yeah. So like, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the outro.
Okay.
Is this Okaga, California?
Yeah.
Yeah. Featuring Leon Ware. Beat is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And a great song to end the album with.
Yeah.
You sound like you're really stuck on the song.
I love it. And the fact that it builds up like the last maybe 3 minutes of this song is just crazy. Yeah.
I know. Like what's funny about this is like the first part, like with Death Camp and especially Cherry Bomb, but even like Run, like this really, the way that it's fun. it's really such an NERD album. Like, I can't explain it in any other way. Like, NERD did the exact same thing. Like, where it's like, oh, this is kind of like punk, like pseudo, like there's a little bit of punk rock influence on this, but it's NERD, but it's Neptunes. Oh, but then we're doing this Lush stuff. Like, it's the exact same mixture, and it's so weird, but I love that, so I'm okay with that.
What album is this closest to? Is this closest to Seeing Sounds?
No. Fly or Die. Especially the switch ups on, I Was Waiting for You, you know, all that, like, yeah, hey. I Was Waiting for, yeah, see?
No comment.
Might have to dig in the archives, get that on SoundCloud. No, believe me, I don't want that to get out either. Woo. Those drums. Oh. Anyway, so overall, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about Cherry Bomb as an album?
Loud. It's loud is probably my only, like, real gripe with this album, but...
The beats are too loud.
Beats are too loud, but... And that's such an old... But it's really, really...
I think this is a really good album. Like, amazingly good. And I need more time away from it, but this is going to sound crazy, people, but, like, specifically Two Seater and Effing Young, I'm just going to say this. They hit me harder musically than probably... anything on that Kendrick album, as crazy as that sounds. It's just a different kind of music. Like, this is my wheelhouse.
Mm.
Like, for some people, like, there are like, the Kendrick album's really dope, right? But there are some records, like, they heard it and they felt something.
Mm-hmm.
Which you need, because the lyrical content on that album, you can analyze it at such a level of over and over again. You need that music. You have to feel the music, right, to counterbalance that. But, like, this, like, the beats on here, I'm like, that hits me. This is my wheelhouse. I think this is an... I mean, it's not perfect, but... I still love it, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that whether or not an album is quote unquote perfect or how many, like, it's not like there's a ratio of like, well, there's only, you know, it's 10 out of 13 dope songs, so it gets a 4 out of 5. Like, it doesn't work like that. Like, it's what you feel. And sometimes a song can be so good that it outweighs everything else. Like, you know, Run, I could have done without it, but Effing Young is so good, I don't care. So all that to say, like, you had talked about earlier when we were before we talked about the Dream album, like, the Young Thug album, like, that doesn't make you want to feel anything. Like, you're just like, eh, whatever. Like, this album makes me feel something, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
For you, how does this compare to his past stuff? Is this, like, a good...
Great progression artistically. Like, again, he went from doing, like, the shock raps to this. And, yeah. Again, I really, really liked Wolf. And if he wants to do this and expand off of this, if this is what he's turning into, I'm on board. I'm on board. So,
yeah. I think I tweeted this, but like, I need to go and make like a Tyler Does NERD type mix on Spotify. Cause that right there might keep me, that might just be my summer. Like,
I need a best of NERD, but like stuff that, cause you know, now it's getting to that time. I say in the next 2 weeks, it's time for us to talk about that Tuxedo album.
Yeah, we could. You know what? We could talk about Tuxedo. We could do like an alt music episode of Calgary Speakers. Talk about Tuxedo. I could get you to listen to Alabama Shakes. You could get me to listen to something. Like, we could do a little what else is out there sort of episode.
Yeah. Okay.
I like how you're like, okay, I'll listen to Alabama Shakes.
No, I was thinking because I'm like, I want to do a summer episode.
Oh, okay.
You know me. I listen to music based off the weather. So I want to put together playlists and like all that stuff.
Yeah, Two Seater. Like, you got to have the windows down. I'm really happy with this Tyler album. It just felt good to like be surprised by something. So
yeah, I knew it was gonna be good. I think this is another trick that I knew it was gonna be good. I didn't like it when I heard it on my phone.
Oh, interesting.
I got it, and like I was skimming through it on my phone, like my first initial listen, and I was like, I don't really like it. And now I have the Nexus 6, which is on record, has not the best speakers, because the best speakers are from the ACC1 M9, but they're the loudest. So I'm like, I don't really. But then I heard it in the car, and then I heard it in my house, and I heard stuff that you're not going to get on regular phone speakers. And I was like, yep. So it's just weird, like certain albums, again, like you just can't listen to them. You listen to them now because you know you've heard it or whatever. But like, if your initial listen was on your phone, you have to do that again, bruh. You listen to that somewhere else. So,
all right, man. Is there anything else you want to say about this week's music?
No, I felt like there was, but no.
All right. So, thank you, everybody. As always, use the hashtag #ClockReadySpeakers and let us know what you think. Are we right about the Tyler album? Are we too hard on the Dream? Did anybody listen to the Young Thug album? These are all things we want to know. So hit us up on Twitter. Follow Armand on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter. Thank you again to all those who bought a t-shirt.
Yes.
T-shirts are arriving.
Yes. Thank you to everybody who, you know, tweeted and all that good stuff. Like, thank you.
Absolutely. Much appreciated. Anything else you want to add, man?
Nah, I'm good, man. I'm in the building.